welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
Ahmed Corbett here, first counselor in the Young Men General Presidency.
We are so grateful.
Missing
to
my
have
cue.
That works.
Brother Corbett with us today to help help us with this interview. And part of the mission of the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter is to provide scholarships to service-oriented high school seniors.
Yeah, each year, approximately 50 deserving students are awarded scholarships to local colleges and trade schools.
And if your family or business would like to join in providing scholarships to these future leaders by sponsoring a podcast, please contact us at byupodcast.slc@gmail.com, and we'd love to talk with you. And each time we do one of these interviews, I feel grateful, probably more than anybody, by virtue of the chance to meet and talk with our amazing guests. And today is certainly no exception, where we get to meet with Brother Charles Dahlquist. Brother Dahlquist, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for being here, Dave. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time as well. I know one of the reasons why we do this podcast is because we only get to have about, 80 to 100 people to come to our luncheons that we just had downstairs, but this can reach a lot more people than that. And we'd love to have you maybe just introduce yourself and talk about you and what you like to do. And then also, if you don't mind, talking a little bit about the luncheon and what you talked about in the luncheon as well.
Okay. I'm a simple Idaho kid. I was born in Provo, but raised in Boise, Idaho. I call that spud blood. It's good to have spud blood. Most important thing I did up there was get to know a young lady who became my wife and the mother of our five daughters, Zella Darley. And it was interesting that we were in the same ward when we were growing up. And she was a year younger than I was, and I was called to be the Sunday school chorister back in those days when you had hymn practice. And for a 16-year-old kid, that was a really taxing assignment. But she was the organist. And when she was called away from there to be in the junior Sunday school, I realized that I missed her. And that's kind of where things started. But we've lived in Boise, and then went to Brigham Young University and University of Utah for law school. And we've had pretty normal jobs, but we've had wonderful. It's amazing the opportunities for service and growth that the church gives us. And we moved back to Washington, D.C. out of law school and had the time of our lives for those 6 years. It was a tremendous time of growth. And then came back to Utah in 1980, and I've been here ever since, except our time 3 years in Germany. So, but life's good. Life's good. Life is difficult. It's challenging, but life is good, and I'm grateful to live in this dispensation. Great time.
Excellent.
Well, I was just listening by to see what Brother Dahlquist would say and not say, since I had the honor of introducing him at the luncheon just now. And he hit a lot of important things. He was he presided over the Germany Hamburg mission from 92 to 95, and before that over the Sandy Granite stake from 82 to 92. And he was I was a new stake president when he came out to New Jersey and taught us things we should do. And little did I know that I would have similar responsibilities in the future. I was just so impressed with this dynamic man. I was doubly impressed because he was also a lawyer and I was a young lawyer at the time. And so thank you, brother, for inspiring me.
You don't know the rest of the story, President Corbett, and that is President Monson told me Charlie, when you go out, many think that the most important reason for going out is to take the message to the saints. He says, that's not it. He says, the greatest reason for going out is for you to feel the Spirit and to learn from them and to feel what's going on in the church. He said, your mind and your heart will never be the same. And you probably found that when you went to South Africa. Yes. I know I did. When I spent some time in Southeast Africa, I'll tell you, and we also spent 2 weeks in Mexico and on an assignment, and our lives were never the same.
Funny that you would say that, because I not only just got back from the Africa South area, so South Africa, Botswana, Zimbabwe, but before that, our international trip was with the Paces in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah.
It was unbelievable. We spent 4 days at the Mexico City temple site where they had two stake centers there, and then went to Villahermosa and Veracruz. And then we went up to Mérida. I have to tell you, when we got to Mérida, I felt like Alma when he had moved away from Zarahemla into what? Where was it when he went in Alma chapter 8 or 9? And he
Gideon.
In Gideon, where he says, I perceive that you're not the same as your brethren there. I just felt like we had moved to a higher level there. It was very different. And I said to the area presidency, I said, this is a different group. We need to teach differently there. And so, but they're wonderful people. We love the people there in Mexico. So, and the people in Africa.
May I ask Brother Dalquist a question? So,
yes,
so
please.
we stand on your shoulders and others, those of others, with what we're trying to do now. Part of that is to help the youth lead, and to help the bishoprics be the young men presidency and focus on the youth. We feel that it's existential to the church that they do so.
It is.
What did you foresee? What do, from your perspective? How did you work on these same issues?
Well, let me take it from a very an odd perspective. Remember, I'm from Idaho, so let me take it from a little different perspective.
We love the great gem state.
That's right. Well, I tell you, it was a wonderful place to grow up. I'm proud to be from Idaho. And when you walk into a Latter-day Saint chapel, you can always find the chapel, right? Can you always find the Relief Society room? Absolutely. Soft chairs, beautiful pictures. Can you find the primary room? Yeah, because they're soft, small chairs, but they also have pictures. You can even find the young women room, right? Because they've got the young women theme up there, and it's there. Can you find the Aaronic Priesthood room? The Aaronic Priesthood basically has become transparent. And when you think, Elder Bednar made an interesting comment. He said, if you take anything that the adversary is doing and you switch it 180 degrees, then you'll see how we ought to be using something. And we know that on the internet, young men are impressed by what they see. It, not the young women. The young women are brought drawn into the internet and those difficult areas by chat rooms and by expression. But it's the young men, what they see. So if in a negative way they are drawn down by what they see, they are also drawn up by what they see. And so one of the challenges that we gave as I went around, and we spent a lot of time out in the field. We were out almost 4 weekends a month. And but when we'd go into a chapel, we would look around. I'd always take a tour to see if I could find an Aaronic Priesthood room. And then I'd encourage the bishops to have a place where these Aaronic Priesthood brethren could have images of those that they could use as heroes. The First Presidency, the 12, John the Baptist, even some of these wonderful Norman Rockwell scouting things. But there are so many wonderful things. Even if the Aaronic Priesthood meets on the stage, you know, there's no place to hang anything. But I felt that when the priesthood realizes that there's a meeting house library and that they have easels and pictures, the millennium is nigh. So go get some easels and some pictures and put them on the stage. Because these young men, I told, when I met with parents, President, I would tell them, I really don't care what's on a young man's bedroom floor. That's up to you. That's the parents. But I do care what's on their wall. And if they have maybe sports heroes or maybe even some musical rock star heroes, that's okay. But wouldn't it be nice to have a picture of a temple or a picture of the Savior there or a picture maybe of the First Presidency or something from a Book of Mormon hero? Because we need to bring the Aaronic Priesthood out of the closet. In fact, if you look at the at some of the 5 years that we were in, Jason Swenson was a great help to us. Jason was with the Deseret News, just barely left the Deseret News. But he was a help to help us to bring the Aaronic Priesthood out of the closet. In fact, Susan Tanner said to me right after we were called, she said, you know, we're glad to have you here because the 70 who were the young men presidency, they had such huge assignments as area members of area presidencies and other things. And she says, now we have somebody that's just focused on Aaronic priesthood. She said, we go out in the field and our young women often say, you know, we have a young women presidency, but who's there for the young men? And so it was our charge to get them out of the closet so that they could, bishops and young men leaders could be aware of that responsibility and have something tangible to hold on to, because our young men, there was just an article in the Deseret News a couple of weeks ago that, I don't know whether you saw it, President, that said young men are falling behind. And it was by a non-Latter-day Saint author, and but this is not new. There's a book called Raising Cain that our young men, you know, when the pendulum swings, it really swings. And so we've, in the 40s and 50s, you know, women were being taken advantage of, and so we needed to move that pendulum back. The problem is it swung so far that now our young men are getting hit, and you ask these young men how it is to be a young man, and some of them will say, no fun. You know, it's no fun being a guy, and that's a long answer, but we wanted to build these young men so that they were proud to be, to hold the priesthood, and to engage the bishops, and I think with your under your ministry right now, we're making some wonderful progress. I see some wonderful things happening. You'll probably say that we're not where we need to be, and that's probably true. But
true
with the first presidency's focus on home-centered and church-supported programs, you know, and with the Elders Quorum presidency being more engaged now than ever before, I think we're making some headway to allow Bishop Ricks to have the time and the effort to be able to focus on the Aaronic priesthood, which is critical.
And Kurt, I know you're coming up with a question. I just wanted to say that I'm on the Wheatley Institute board down at BYU, and we just had Richard Reeves of the Brookings Institute come in and speak to us, and his topic was solving the crisis of our boys and men, where he made some of the same points that Brother Dahlke was just made, and this sort of absence, this he calls it a lack of a script. There's a very clear and concise and definite script for women and girls, what they should be doing and what we want them to do in society. But we're less clear about boys, and so I love that you just validated all of that.
Well, and it's more critical for boys, because if you look at young men in the teenage years, girls are always ahead. I mean, girls in those 14, 15, 16, they're better organized, they're better communicators, and some way young men have got to catch up, or the girls will not want to look at them to be able to marry them. So these young men, the leveling the leveling event was for me a mission. You know, a mission is where these young men go and they grow up and they unselfishly serve for 2 years, and all of a sudden they come home and they're different, and the young women go, whoa, you know, there's somebody that I thought had the potential, but now I know. But without that, and it's a time for us to be able to focus on the young men, not only inside the church, but across the board, because our young men are falling behind and falling back. What's interesting, President, is you probably remember President Hinckley gave a talk in priesthood meeting a number of years ago, and he talked about young men falling behind in college education. It was an amazing talk, and everybody was thinking, wow, is that really true? Well, that's the prophetic voice. We're seeing it right now. And it's time, and that's why I'm so glad to have you three brethren there to be able to focus on that, because you've got the capabilities and the skills to be able to help us to do what's needed to help these young men rise to the potential they have.
Thank you.
And one moment in the luncheon I appreciate is that three of your missionaries were there to support you and be there. And that just, I mean, throughout all these different responsibilities you've had, I'm sure those relationships, you keep coming back to those relationships that you had. Anything you would add to just those relationships you've had, not only in your mission, but in various responsibilities you've had?
you know, relationships is really where it all is. It's whether it's a relationship with a missionary or a young single adult or with a companion or with a member of the family or a relationship with our Heavenly Father. Those, we have to focus on those. And those three missionaries that came today were dynamite missionaries, all three of them. I mean, Sister Lyman and Elder Steed and Elder Jarman, they, in each in their own right, they were very different, but just as dedicated as could be. And I was truthful when I said that they taught us more than I ever would have taught them. They just, their devotion and their dedication, and talk about steadfast and immovable. There were three right there, but no, it's good. And sometimes that's what causes people to lose all feelings of self-esteem, is because their relationships go astray and they have no one to hang on to. And I was reading a story just yesterday, actually, about a mother whose son had befriended somebody that was at school. And he said he encouraged his mother to be able to call this friend's mother. Well, she got busy and everything else, and the mother ended up taking her life. And she said, "I wonder if I had followed that prompting and just reached out, if it would have made a difference." And I think as we walk throughout life, we underestimate our ability as normal garden variety human beings to make a difference. And sometimes it's just letting somebody know that you love them, or to send a note, or walk across the street and spend a little time with somebody. And life is very busy, but sometimes it's too busy.
Yeah, and probably one of my favorite quotes of all time by President Kimball, said, "The Lord does love us, but it's usually through another person that he meets."
That's true. Needs. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, President, thank you. We are so grateful to you for being here, for your service.
Well, thanks for what you do. It's a great association, and thanks for the good that you do, especially the scholarships that you give. And I don't know how much a scholarship is or whatever it is, but I've got five $20 bills in my pocket that I'm willing to just leave with you here. It looks to me like you've got some good adult supervision over here.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you want to trust us with that.
But it'll be a small contribution to the good that you're doing. So thank you for
what
you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next month with our next episode of the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast.
Thanks, Dave.